Let's read together Acts chapter 23. In this chapter, we have Paul's defense before the Jewish Sanhedrin, and then his transfer to the Roman headquarters at Caesarea. Let's begin by reading verses 1 through 10, Acts chapter 23, beginning at verse 1. Then Paul, looking earnestly at the council, said, "Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day." And the high priest Ananias commanded those who stood by him to strike him on the mouth. Then Paul said to him, "God will strike you, you whitewashed wall, for you sit to judge me according to the law, and do you command me to be struck contrary to the law?" And those who stood by said, "Do you revile God's high priest?" Then Paul said, "I did not know, brethren, that he was the high priest, for it is written, 'You shall not speak evil of a ruler of your people.'" But when Paul perceived that one part were Sadducees and the other Pharisees, he cried out in the council, "Men and brethren, I am a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee. Concerning the hope and resurrection of the dead, I am being judged." And when he had said this, a dissension arose between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the assembly was divided. For Sadducees say that there is no resurrection, and no angel or spirit, but the Pharisees confess both. Then there arose a loud outcry, and the scribes of the Pharisees' party arose and protested, saying, "We find no evil in this man, but if a spirit or an angel has spoken to him, let us not fight against God." Now when there arose a great dissension, the commander, fearing lest Paul might be pulled to pieces by them, commanded the soldiers to go down and take him by force from among them and bring him into the barracks. Let's consider a few background notes as we begin our study of Acts chapter 23. In Acts chapter 22, Paul was given the opportunity to witness to the Jewish mob that had beaten him and had tried to kill him in the temple courts. At first, the Jews listened to Paul. But when he mentioned God's grace to the Gentiles, again the Jews went into an uproar and shouted for Paul's death. In order to appease the mob and get to the bottom of why the Jews wanted Paul's death, the Roman military commander ordered Paul to be examined by scourging. It was at this point that Paul revealed that he was a Roman citizen. To scourge or even bind a Roman citizen before it was proved that he was guilty of some crime was illegal and would not sit well in this commander's record, to say the least. So now, in order to determine why the Jews were in such an uproar and so intent on Paul's death, the commander decided to bring Paul before the Jewish council, that is the Sanhedrin, the governing body of the Jewish people. So now Paul has an opportunity to witness to the leaders of Israel when he stands before the Sanhedrin. In verse 1 of chapter 23, Paul testified, "Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day." This was an honest statement. Even when Paul was persecuting the early Christians, he thought he was doing God's will. After the high priest, Ananias, had a couple of his subordinates illegally strike Paul on the mouth, Paul called him a whitewashed wall, meaning appearing righteous on the outside, but inwardly corrupt. Apparently, Paul did not realize that this man was the ruling high priest and apologized by quoting Exodus 22, verse 28, "You shall not speak evil of a ruler of your people." Now, why Paul did not recognize the high priest is debated. Was it because the high priest was not wearing his official robes, since the Sanhedrin had been assembled on such short notice? Was it because of Paul's possible bad eyesight? We don't know for sure. Well, so much for background. Let's move now to our doctrinal teaching points for Acts 23. Doctrinal point number one, believers should be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Believers should be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. In Matthew chapter 10, when the Lord sent his disciples out with the gospel of the kingdom, he said to them in verse 16, "Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves, therefore be wise as serpents and harmless as doves." This verse certainly has an application for us today. As we preach and teach the gospel, we need to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. That is, wise as to avoiding danger and compromising situations, and wise as to seeing and striking where the enemy's position is weak and vulnerable, but harmless when it comes to our way of life and faith. Honesty and integrity should characterize our dealings with people. Believers should be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Now we see this principle illustrated in the way the Apostle Paul handled himself before the Sanhedrin here in verses 6 through 10 of Acts 23. Paul perceived that some of the members of the Sanhedrin were Sadducees and some were Pharisees. Paul knew that these religious sects were not in agreement with each other. The Sadducees did not believe in angels or spirits or the resurrection of the body, as the Pharisees did. Paul saw this point of vulnerability in the Sanhedrin, and he struck at this weakness, as we see in verse 6. As a result of Paul's strategic strike, he caused a division in the Sanhedrin, and even got the Pharisees to defend his innocence, as we see in verse 9. And notice how throughout this heated discussion, Paul was harmless as a dove. He was not shouting, and he was not manipulating the truth. He was wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove. We too need to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves when we deal with the opposition. Illustration. Take the whole field of science, for example, where there is so much theory that is not in line with the Bible. Every time we see vulnerable weaknesses, and there are many, where the theories and those who hold them are inconsistent, we should point this out. Even publicize these contradictions. Believers should be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Doctrinal point number 2. Believers should look for the way of escape. Believers should look for the way of escape. Verses 11 through 35. But the following night, the Lord stood by him and said, "Be of good cheer, Paul, for as you have testified for me in Jerusalem, so you must also bear witness at Rome." And when it was day, some of the Jews banded together and bound themselves under an oath, saying that they would neither eat nor drink till they had killed Paul. Now there were more than 40 who had formed this conspiracy. They came to the chief priests and elders and said, "We have bound ourselves under a great oath that we will eat nothing until we have killed Paul. Now you therefore, together with the council, suggest to the commander that he be brought down to you tomorrow as though you were going to make further inquiries concerning him. But we are ready to kill him before he comes near." So when Paul's sister's son heard of their ambush, he went and entered the barracks and told Paul. Then Paul called one of the centurions to him and said, "Take this young man to the commander, for he has something to tell him." So he took him and brought him to the commander and said, "Paul the prisoner called me to him and asked me to bring this young man to you. He has something to say to you." Then the commander took him by the hand, went aside, and asked privately, "What is it that you have to tell me?" And he said, "The Jews have agreed to ask that you bring Paul down to the council tomorrow, as though they were going to inquire more fully about him. But do not yield to them, for more than 40 of them lie in wait for him, men who have bound themselves by an oath, that they will neither eat nor drink till they have killed him. And now they are ready, waiting for the promise from you." So the commander let the young man depart and commanded him, "Tell no one that you have revealed these things to me." And he called for 2 centurions, saying, "Prepare 200 soldiers, 70 horsemen, and 200 spearmen to go to Caesarea at the 3rd hour of the night, and provide mounts to set Paul on, and bring him safely to Felix the governor." He wrote a letter in the following manner: "Claudius Lysias, to the most excellent governor Felix, greetings. This man was seized by the Jews and was about to be killed by them. Coming with the troops, I rescued him, having learned that he was a Roman. And when I wanted to know the reason they accused him, I brought him before their council. I found out that he was accused concerning questions of their law, but had nothing charged against him deserving of death or chains. And when it was told me that the Jews lay in wait for the man, I sent immediately to you and also commanded his accusers to state before you the charges against him. Farewell." Then the soldiers, as they were commanded, took Paul and brought him by night to Antipatris. The next day they left the horsemen to go with him and return to the barracks. When they came to Caesarea and had delivered the letter to the governor, they also presented Paul to him. And when the governor had read it, he asked what province he was from. And when he understood that he was from Cilicia, he said, "I will hear you when your accusers also have come." And he commanded him to be kept in Herod's praetorium. The phrase "way of escape" in our doctrinal point comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, which says, "No temptation or test has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted or tested beyond what you are able. But with the temptation or test will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. 1 Corinthians 10:13. Now the Greek word that's used here for temptation or test in this verse can refer either to temptations to do evil that we face, or tests of our faith that come our way. In either case, God promises a way of escape so that we do not have to sin or fail the test of faith. Now, in some situations, it's conceivable that the way of escape will be martyrdom. But always, we should look for the way of escape that God promises to provide. We've seen in our studies of Paul's ministry that he was not afraid of persecution, but he did not suffer needlessly. He looked for the way of escape and took the way that God provided. We've seen that Paul used his Roman citizenship as a way of escape that God provided from scourging in chapter 22. Now here in chapter 23, God provides a way of escape in a most unusual way. We read in verse 16 that Paul's nephew overheard the plot to ambush Paul on a second proposed visit to the Sanhedrin. More than 40 men bound themselves by oath to fast and eat or drink nothing until they had killed the Apostle Paul. Well, I wonder how many of these men cheated on their vow. In any case, Paul saw the way of escape and sent his nephew with one of the centurions to tell the commander about the plot. As a result, the commander arranged to have Paul sent down to Caesarea on the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. Paul was protected by an armed guard of 200 foot soldiers and 70 horsemen and 200 spearmen. Quite a bit of security. I wonder how the 40 starving men who took the vow viewed this unexpected turn of events. In the letter that Commander Lysias sent with Paul to Caesarea, we see that he takes quite a bit of credit for himself, and for obvious reasons, doesn't say a word about almost scourging Paul, a Roman citizen. Through it all, Paul was safely delivered to Caesarea, all because Paul's nephew overheard a plot, and Paul saw the way of escape from the evil plans of the Sanhedrin. Paul took the way of escape when it was presented to him, and so should we. Believers should look for the way of escape. Practical application from Acts chapter 23. Remember, the Lord stands by you. Remember, the Lord stands by you. In verse 11, we read that, on the following night, the Lord stood by Paul and said, "Be of good cheer, Paul, for as you have testified for me in Jerusalem, so you must also bear witness at Rome." What an encouragement this appearance of the Lord must have been for the Apostle Paul. You know, we too can be encouraged and confident of the Lord's presence with us in times of crisis. We may not see the Lord physically, but we know that He is standing there with us because He said, "I will never leave you nor forsake you." Hebrews 13:5. Let me ask you, are you going through a crisis in your life right now? Maybe a very tough test of your faith and you want to do the right thing? Remember, the Lord stands by you.